Owlcast, the official podcast of ACS Athens. Listen to the exciting story of the American Community Schools of Athens. Check out what drives all the members of our international community of learners as we create the education of the future. Here's John Papadakis.
Welcome to the Owlcast. In today's episode, we're thrilled to have with us Kentrell Martin, an advocate for accessible education and communication. Kentrell recently made a profound impact on the learning community at ACS Athens through his engaging sessions with early childhood students and teachers, focusing on the transformative power of sign language. As an expert in the field, Kentrell shared his expertise on learning differences and emphasized the importance of embracing diverse communication channels to foster a more inclusive learning environment. His visit to our school sparked a wave of enthusiasm among educators and students alike as they explored new ways to connect and understand each other. Kentrell Martin is the president and creator of the Shelley's Adventure series. He's also an author of many of the books in the series. Growing up with a deaf brother, Kentrell saw how the world viewed deaf people. He created Shelley's Adventure so that he could introduce kids and parents to American Sign Language and the deaf culture. Kentrell sees Shelley's Adventures as a company that will play a part in helping bridge the gap between the deaf and hearing world. He envisions Shelley's Adventures as a company that will have a positive effect on every community. According to Mr. Martin, when many people hear sign language, they automatically think that they don't need to learn because they can hear. But American Sign Language is just like any other language. It doesn't hurt to learn a new language. It has many benefits to children, and it's one of the fastest growing languages in the U.S. In daycares, schools, high schools, and colleges, they're all using it, with higher education now accepting it as a foreign language. In our conversation, we're also joined by Sophia Morris, Early Childhood Program Coordinator at ACS Athens. With Kentrell and Sophia, we explore his journey, the significance of sign language in early childhood education, and the broader implications of embracing diverse communication methods in the classroom. Get ready to be inspired as we uncover valuable insights that Kentrell Martin brings to the forefront of educational innovation and inclusivity. Stay tuned for a captivating episode that highlights the impact of bridging communication gaps in the world of learning. With Sophia and Kentrell today, we're discussing all about being different, bridging the gap between the deaf and the hearing, teaching sign language to the early childhood students, misconceptions about communicating with the hearing impaired, the job and the challenges of the educational interpreter, pivoting in the classroom to meet the needs of students with differences, the crucial importance of early intervention, becoming an interpreter out of an urge to really help, and keeping a folder of feedback for motivation.
I'm so excited to introduce Kentrell Martin, the author of Shelley's Adventures book series. Kentrell is the author of the majority of the books in the series, and I believe his wife is also a co-author. What excited us about Shelley's Adventures is that the stories are based on a true storyline off of Kentrell's brother. His brother was born deaf, and Kentrell was inspired then to write about children who experience these differences growing up, and making sure that everybody understands that this is just as normal. ASL is a normal way to communicate, just a different way to communicate with others. So we're really excited that he had the opportunity to come to our school and speak to the early childhood students from PJ all the way to second grade. And not only is he a big fan here, because this is his second year visiting ACS Athens, but we also had some students retain sign language, and today they learned over 35 different signs. So I'd like to let Kentrell give us his perspective. Welcome.
All right. Well, thank you all for having me here again. This is my second time in Athens, and I'm joining. I'm grateful just for the opportunity. And so, yeah, so today was, you know, it was great. Again, many times when I go to schools, visits, I mean, luckily, many of the kids have already seen me, but many times when I go to schools, most schools are, when I tell them that the students are going to learn over 35 signs or 30 signs in 30 minutes or less, most teachers are looking at me like, good luck, you know, but the kids retain it really well. And I'm always happy to hear, like, when I leave schools, that schools, you know, reach out and let me know that, you know, the kids are still signing in the classroom and things like that. And so that inspires me to, you know, keep going, even, you know, trying to get better, because that's the goal of the company with Shutters Adventures, is bridging the gap between the deaf and the hearing world and bringing awareness to American Sign Language and other languages, and just letting kids know that, you know, the world is so big, we're always going to meet people who are, we may consider different, but in actuality, we're all different, you know, in some way or another. So the biggest thing for me is, you know, the kids are our future. So for me, with any change I think that we want to see in the world or with anything, it's with the focus on the kids, because that's, you know, that's our future.
Mm-hmm. That's where it starts.
Yep.
Yeah. And I think that's the most important thing in the storyline. When you write about Shelly and her adventures, it's like those experiences that she goes through and what she's encountered with, and making it real and tangible for the students in that, and through those stories. And so by having some kids order those stories and take them home, it also extends to the families. The moms and dads then get to see what it is that they heard about with your visit here.
Absolutely. And I think also, like, I had the first two stories, and now when I write, a lot of it comes from, you know, kids' perspectives, because questions I may get, it's like, if she has a deaf dad, you know, how does she do this? It's like, you know, same way we do anything else with our parents, but some things we don't really think about even as adults, but then it kind of makes sense, like, nothing really changes, you know? And so that's why at the beginning of every presentation, I kind of give the kids the example of, if we all go to another country or somewhere, mm-hmm. and they don't speak the same language as us, would that mean that we're different or weird? And they're like, no. And it's like, it's the same thing. It's a communication barrier. And I think putting it out like that, the kids kind of understand. They see the difference and they understand, okay, so you see someone who's deaf doing something else, is not that they're different or anything.
You
like
said that today as well. And I just remember thinking, the first thing I did is scan the room, because this is the international school. So the one thing our kids know very well is I don't know the same languages as all my peers. So when you said that, I quickly scanned the room and I saw some kids going, just nodding, like, I really, really get what you're saying. And some of the other ones who didn't understand what you were saying, right? And right. It just kind of went over their head. But I thought, oh, you'll soon be here. You'll soon be here with the rest of us, you know?
Right.
You said you're coming from doing this thing, different schools in the States, right?
Yes.
And you're coming to international school. Is the sign language different from language to language? How can you relate if you know the sign language of one language to the sign language of another language?
All right. So as far as in American, like with sign language in other countries? Or
my understanding is that American Sign Language is the concept. Other sign languages have the letters. Oh. What is the difference?
I think, like, just from my experience from meeting other deaf people who may speak multiple sign languages, what I got from it is, it's just different, I guess, structure aspect, right? Like in English, I remember having Spanish class and wondering why, like, the verbs, or I may be saying it wrong, but the verbs or something went behind or something like that. And American Sign Language, a big misconception is, like, we think it's word for word with English, but in reality, the structure is more like, it fits more along, like, with French. Mm. And, you know, so the structure isn't the same, but many times, like even in the States, we're not made aware of this. It's a lot of things I learned, right, going back to interpreting school, that I didn't even know about American Sign Language, and I had a deaf brother. So many times I think misconceptions of, like, sometimes when I have a lot more time with the students, especially the older students, is making them aware that if you meet someone who's deaf and say you write something out on paper and if they can't read it, it has nothing to do with a literacy problem in a sense, because you're writing in English and that's not their first language.
Mm.
Their first language is American Sign Language. There are many deaf people who have a strong concept of English, but And you can see it when they write it, but many times they write it in the same structure as the signing is. So for example, if I was signing, I'm going to the store in sign language, from the structure aspect, it would be store I'm going, store I go.
So there is a syntax. There's a specific syntax.
Right. Yeah.
You talk to a lot of students. Did you see these kind of misconceptions from their interactions with you, or if, you know, questions that they pose to you? Did you see these misconceptions?
I think for them, it's more, since they're so young, it's more, you know, curiosity. But like, it's probably more so with adults. You know, it's many times adults say something like, they're deaf, how do they do that? And it's like, think about that question before. Mm-hmm. Think about it again. If I cover your ears and you can't hear, is that going to stop you from doing anything else? Mm-hmm. It's like, no, you're just not hearing sound, but it's not changing you as a person or anything. And so that's one of the things, too, I explain to kids, because a question that I get a lot is, you know, how does someone become deaf? And there's, I explain to them there's many different ways. You know, my brother was born deaf, but yeah, people get sick or, you know, accidents, so many different ways. And as I explain to them, like, even the idea of, sometimes we see someone who's deaf, and if they're talking really well, it's like, how are they talking if they're deaf? And I explained to them, okay, if right now someone turned off your ears where you can't hear, would that stop you from talking? Right, you wouldn't be able to hear yourself, but you still can talk. And so many times people who can talk really well, chances are they weren't born deaf, that something happened in life to where—
That's an important thing for people to understand.
Right. And then two, another thing is culture. Like, sometimes we don't think, but, and I learned a few things. It's like, I'm pretty sure in every country, deaf culture is maybe even different then. But like in America, you know, the community is tight knit and they have their own culture. So many times for them, they may ask you a question like, you know, if you told me you bought a car, I'm gonna ask you how much you paid for it. And it's not to be nosy. It's, they're so used to not receiving information that they don't want to go somewhere if they like the same car and someone try to oversell it to them because they know that they're deaf and try to take advantage. So they may ask questions or say things like, you've gained a lot of weight, you know, but how else can you say that signing wise if somebody gained a lot of weight? But it's not to be rude, but in their community, it's understandable. But outside, if somebody say, what did they say? It's like, that was rude. But it's just like the world, right? We go to different places. Something we may consider rude, it's part of the culture there, and vice versa. So, you know, I think that's a thing to learn. And even the aspect of education, I initially wanted to go into childhood education, interpreting. But then I, as I started taking classes, I started learning more things about how to become an educational interpreter. In certain states, you didn't need a certain certification. And the reality is, for deaf kids, the first language model, like spoken language model that they learn, majority, like 90%, is when they get to school, because the parents don't, you know, sign or do anything at home. So they fall behind their peers in the learning aspect. So when they get to school, that interpreter, that's the first language model that they're facing. And so at schools, you're having students fresh out of college who, back then, you know, years ago, it was the easiest job to get from an interpreter standpoint. But now, the effect that it's going to have on that kid, you have a job, but the kid is going to suffer because you haven't been doing it long enough. And so a lot of the things that you may be teaching the kid is, you know, and the interpreters that they need, you know, the schools don't pay them enough to, that they have other jobs. So that's a, so for me, I'm like, I don't want, you know, I wouldn't want that on my hands to know that, you know,
it's,
I'm
a big not responsibility, giving,
right,
isn't
it? You know, so. So that's a lot of things like that. But they don't teach teachers or anything. Like, for example, if you have a deaf student and you're doing group work to slow down your readings or things like that, because the kid, deaf kid, would never get to participate, because if the interpreter is interpreting what you said and you don't pause or give it a chance, that kid, by the time you ask the question, that deaf kid is never going to get a chance to answer, because
to participate.
Yeah,
that's right.
And so little things like that, that I didn't know, even think about, but as I went back to school and started learning, it's like, teachers aren't, if they have deaf students, those schools aren't teaching then teachers those things.
So true. So.
You are listening to the Owlcast, the official podcast of ACS Athens.
You know, you mentioned something about the deaf community, right? But when now I'm bringing it back into the classroom and I hear what you say, and it just triggers this memory for me when I was teaching third grade, and this is back in Chicago, and one of my students was in a special ed room and he was having inclusion sessions in my class for unit, like a social studies or science class. The aide would bring him over and Craig was nonverbal. And he'd come in the back of the room and he would sit with his aide. And I always had him next to a group of peers who were showing a little bit more empathy, more kind, and kind of like would reach out differently. And they were very comfortable with him. But every time Craig came to my class, my lesson structure changed 360, right? And so I did everything interactive. I had all the worksheets ready. I had visuals all over the place. So I would give him a few seconds more to answer that might have been a little bit differently run than by not having him in the class. But it also made it so much more rich because the kids had some think time. I gave the lesson plans a little bit more detail. And then he was always the first one to get everything right.
was it the delivery or the content also that you changed?
John, I think I changed everything because it was testing me as a teacher. What Kendrell just said is you don't learn to do these things in the mainstream, you know, classes when you're going into education. I think nowadays they're looking at even, you know, reading instruction differently, special ed at its entirety, or, you know, learning needs, let's say, at its entirety differently. So that's a plus to the education system, but it does start when kids are younger. And the younger we start, and what I always tell families here is that early intervention, no matter what intervention our kids need, is number one, whether that's being alert and aware to like the differences around us, and then even how we operate and exercise our lessons in the classroom too. So
my question is about the difference of the students that are born deaf or that they grow to be deaf. As you said before, you can hear someone speak normally, but they're hard of hearing. And you can see others that they're trying to vocalize and that you can understand 100%. Is there a difference in your experience in the approach in the young ages when you see these two different types of students with learning, with hearing differences?
I would say, yeah, only because for one, most households that have deaf kids, they don't sign much. So they fall behind early. And so, you know, with being able to hear, I think, and then going deaf later, you get the kind of experience, like you get to get ahead. So unless it's, you know, if you're already speaking and then you go deaf or something like that, you've already kind of established a language, you know, with that. And then too, you know, unless a parent is in a city that has the resources or other deaf, you know, if you have five deaf kids in a city of, you know, 300,000 or something like that, the resource is probably going to be minimum. Like, they're going to send them to a school and, you know, there's not a big community. And so I meet a lot of deaf people who said that, you know, they pretty much did home signs and things like that until, you know, certain grades. So one thing about with sign language versus any other languages, even if you speak, you know, whatever language it is, at least if you're in that environment, it's a spoken language. With sign language, if you're not able to comprehend whatever the vocal language is, no matter where you're at, you're going to struggle because everyone isn't going to sign. Wherever you go, there's going to be a main vocal language that's there. But as far as signing, that they have to get that second language, but you can't get the second language, which would be their vocal language, until they sort of master or have a comprehension of their main language, which would be sign language.
You mentioned before that you started as something different in becoming an interpreter. That was not your initial plan, right?
Right.
What clicked in your mind and you said, that's what I'm going to do now? This is what I want to get into?
So I had the idea a little before I went to interpreter school, and sort of what got me excited with interpreter school, and I think it all kind of came together. I was at a deaf event with my brother, and I met an interpreter, and they were like, have you ever thought about being an interpreter? I think you'll be a good interpreter, you know. And so I ended up going back to school and, you know.
Why did you think he said that?
I don't know. I probably it was more natural seeing me, you know, with my brother and just doing it because I think in certain jobs, whether it's being an educator or anything, like where you're assisting people, if it's not natural and you're not in it to really help, at some point it's going to crumble, you know. And so. And I think even in the education system. I think you can see the teachers when they really care about the kids versus someone who just wants a check. I think there you can always tell the difference with that. And, you know, I think in every industry, there's always someone who's like, oh, let me try this. Heard they pay well doing this. So, you know,
right.
So that's not the main reason. And so I started going and interpreting, but I did have the ideas for the book. But I think everything just happened. It was time, and I learned so much. So much that I learned from there, I'm able to apply. And then just, you know, if I can, you know, make educators aware, kids aware, you know, and just because, you know, my books, I wanted them to be educational as well. So I didn't have intentions of fully, like it just sort of happened. I think everything just was timing and fell in place.
Mm-hmm. From your experience, what would you say has been one of the biggest challenges that you've faced before you started going on the authoring career? I mean, what is one of the biggest challenges that you faced?
That's a tough one. Probably like once I became an author, that's probably like I'm pretty laid back. I'm simple, no high demands or anything like that. I'm one of those guys who can probably like just live anywhere and be to myself and don't have much requirements. But I think, so I was working, but once I had kids, you're living for them in the sense of, I was working full time and then I was doing the books on the side on the weekend. And then it got to a point, I really was working 7 days a week, and seeing the kids get older, and it's like, I got to make a decision, pick one or the other so that I can go in the route, taking the jump to doing it full time. I'd probably say that was the boldest. So many times I see people who say like, oh, I see what you're doing. I should do that. You know, you make it look easy, but it's not easy. But it's not easy at all. So the thing is, what makes it easy is being in front of kids. They give me energy. I can come in like a day and be tired, but their energy transfers to me. So while I make it look easy and I can liven up and really be into it and things like that, the reality is when people ask me, I'm like, you really, I think, have to be built for it, because it's, even though I make it look easy, I don't think you understand, like, you know, how much I do, you mm-hmm. know, and with the travel and still trying to balance, you know, work life, you know, family, marriage, kids, all of that. So, I mean, I think that's the toughest thing for me is the balance.
Kendrell, you do make it look easy, and you really, and I think it's because you're passionate about what you do, and the kid, that energy you're talking about, I think only an educator would really understand. So for the teachers that are going to hear this, I think they'll really appreciate, you know, hearing that, because that's the truth for all of us. Like when you're with the kids, energy is transferred from you and from them, and then that's what creates that unity and that community of learners. So I think you have so much to bring, and I know we're very grateful to have you here with our community. The kids definitely absorb everything you have to bring. So we're grateful that you shared that energy with us.
I'm extremely grateful that, you know, you all had me the first time, and then, you know, I was honored. As soon as you even asked, I didn't even have to read the full email. I was like, I'm in there, you know, let me know the dates. So, you know, I'm very appreciative, and I learned a lot from, you know, teachers and educators as well. I have a greater appreciation. I always appreciated teachers and things, but being in the system and seeing it's like, I don't think like educators get enough credit. And I think kids are our future. Teachers, that's our biggest resource for providing for it. But it's one of the things that funding gets taken mm-hmm. away from, and seems like not enough is put into it. And I've seen, while I may be out to school signing books, you know, I'm seeing teachers still there working, you know, right. outside of their hours, right. you know, planning before. So I've gotten a greater appreciation for educators because I've gotten to see firsthand, you know, what you all go through as well.
I guess my last question is about the teachers. I mean, from your encounter with them, and I'm pretty sure they have asked you different things. You talked with them a bit different things. What was really striking in their comments?
The teachers?
Yeah.
Ooh, that's a good one. I don't know. I think more so like afterwards, like the emails, like I have a folder where like, you know, when I receive, you know, compliments and different things, like it's a motivation folder, right? You know, so.
So you read it after everything and yeah, then before
and
everything.
Right. Okay. And it's like, you know, it's times where, you know, like it's not that you don't like what you're doing or anything like that, but with anything, sometimes you get tired and it's like, oh, I just need a break or something like yeah. that. But then you can go back and read those things and it's like, can't stop. Like I gotta, you know, mm-hmm. keep going just as strong because, you know, if to me, it's like, if kids gonna tell the truth and speak, you know, if you have that, and then for an educator who's around kids more than anybody else, you know, if they, you know, can see the value in something and show that, I know that I'm doing the right thing and I'm on the right track. So that motivates me. So it's like, it's easy to get, you know, a compliment or even something that's not a compliment from the outside. But if I getting it, receiving it from an educator who has the experience, who probably seen it all in the classroom, if I can get those type of compliments or even feedback and things like that, I value that a lot, because it points me and keep pushing me in the right direction.
You know, teachers see what you do. Look, you, and look, John, you didn't see this. So if you walked in on one of the sessions, Kendrell's sitting there and he's asking kids to stop talking and sign to him. So not only does he, you know, introduce the signs, he explains the sign, he gives a definition of the sign, and he's doing this one after the other. The kids are following, mimicking, and then you give them time to ask to give that back to you. And that reciprocation of give and take with learning at that moment is so indicative of what a teacher does in a day, right? But you have to do it in 30 minutes, 35 signs. So it's probably like the fast forwarded version of like what we do when we're doing our lessons in a week. And you're kind of giving it to them in one small slot. And a teacher will be like, oh my God, that's, you know, we're planning for memory in a week and he's doing this in 30 minutes. So I think when you get those messages, really, really take them to heart, because the gratitude and the appreciation, the recognition of what you're doing in that time is meaningful from our teachers.
Well, I appreciate it.
Final words, Ms. Moros.
Besides all the gratitude I just shared, you know, no, I'm happy. I'm excited about this partnership. I'm happy to have met Kendrell and have him part of our community, because the one thing we want our kids to take away, what Kendrell presents to us so well, is that, you know, learning comes in all shapes and sizes and different forms. And it's one of the most important takeaways. So Shelley's Adventures it is for our kids. Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming.
No problem. Thank you all for having me. And anytime, say the word, I'm here. So, you know, you
have sign it for us.
I'm here. So you have a lifelong partner. As long as you need an author here, I'm here. So,
wonderful.
You know, thank you.
Thank
you
so much. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Right,
thank
you. You are listening to The Owlcast, the official podcast of ACS Athens. Make sure you subscribe to The Owlcast on Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. This has been a production of the ACS Athens Media Studio.